The College Game Day podcast is presented by Old Dominion Freight Line, helping the world keep promises. First Saturday in November brings plenty of showdowns. For the first time, they have college football playoff rankings beside them. This is the College Game Day podcast for Friday, November 3rd. Reese Davis, Pete Thamel, and Stanford Steve here. Looking forward to making some picks with you gentlemen. Steve, the fridge on game day has scuffled around a little bit, but you continue to distance yourself from the field, it appears, in terms of making picks here on the pod.
Just happy to have somewhere else to go, Reese. You know, the Saturdays, a stare down at the fridge, and I'm happy to see your guys' faces and be able to give some thoughts and actually give some winners and be over 500. That's the goal.
Pete, what do you have to say for yourself?
I'd at least get some blanket like all favorites or all underdogs. I should have probably raised my hand for that, but deserved goose egg. Cold when I opened the email yesterday. Deserved goose egg. So 20 games under. I might as well just buy you guys a steak in Tuscaloosa this week because that's where we're headed. So
having. I'm sure neither of you are familiar with this being from different environs, but when I was a kid, there was this guy who had a very popular radio syndication segment that people would run on various stations late in the week during the college football season. And he was a gentleman called Leonard Posthostis, and Leonard would pick losers. He also had a newsletter that went out weekly that you could find at the gas station. And it was a corny thing. It was kind of hilarious. Like he would refer, like for instance, as he would give his thing in his very Southern accent, he would say, something like, the Gainesville swamp lizards, you know, as opposed to the alligators, and call them the Tuscaloosa pachyderms and the, you know, all of that. And he would go through this whole thing. And then he would get to the end after he broke down how it was going to happen. It's always based on the mascots or traditions or history or whatever. And he would get to the end and he would go, Leonard's losers in a close one. That meant closer than the experts think. And within the spread, he would go Leonard's, and he'd pick the losers as opposed to picking the winners. So I wanted to give you the benefit of the doubt and think that perhaps you were channeling your inner Leonard's loser and going 0-8, which I'm now jinxing myself to go 0-whatever this week.
I think we need to know that our intrepid producer Taylor has been challenged, because we thought he did a spot on impression of me a couple weeks ago when I was absent on the podcast. But Ty Schmidt threw down the gauntlet yesterday, Taylor. He threw down the gauntlet. All right. Hand gestures, the whole thing. He did not have the obscure staffer references that sort of defined your impersonation, but I think he covered the spread in the Thamel impersonation off.
Was that fun, Pete, or did it make you?
It was fun.
You're a good sport.
Yeah, no. It was.
You're
it
a
was,
great sport, but fun. what was that like right there?
It was a little weird. I just started getting all these texts with like crying emojis, like for like an hour. And then I finally like stopped and like looked at it. And then I watched it. And I will say this, Pat did call me that morning and said, one of our staffers is going for you as Halloween. I wanted you to know. And I said, oh, who? Because at first I thought about Boston Connor. And we don't exactly look alike. We certainly don't have the same hairstylist. And he said the talented one. And I said, oh, it's going to be Ty. And then I was like, oh, it's going to be good. Ty's good. So I'm glad Lou Holtz was not offended that Ty cheated. So,
yeah. How about the great thing about Ty Schmidt's impression of Lou talking to Lou is that Lou sat there and answered the questions, except for the one reference of, I hope my lisp is not as bad as yours. Other than that, Lou sat there as if he were talking to me or someone else, you know, it was like never acknowledging until that one time.
I rewatched last night because I missed it live when Ryan Day from Ohio State went to the set and talked to fake Lou. I was dying laughing. He was like, I just decided to go home and watch Matlock.
That's the only miss, because I know this shows my age and I know it shows my rather unusual affinity for old TV. I discovered something about Lou that he and I have in common. every night for him and most every night for me, I flip on the old black and white Perry Masons. So it's not Matlock that Lou loves. It's Perry Mason.
You watch Perry Mason every night, Reese Davis?
Not every night. Most every night. Like you get in bed right before you go to sleep, you flip it on. It's calming because everybody on Perry Mason, even the criminals, have a conscience. And at the end, you know, if they when Perry figures out who really did the killing, there are a few exceptions where the guy will go, and he deserved it. You know, but most of the time, you know, there's this overwhelming moment where they realize the magnitude of what they've done by committing murder. You know, so, and they get on top of it and, you know,
do you have those saved on?
Like a good whodunit.
Huh? Do you have those saved on DVR? Or there's a channel, man. You could go to.
No, Pluto TV. Pluto TV, if you're an old school TV aficionado, they have like channel after channel. Like, I love the Andy Griffith show too. There's a channel. All it shows is Andy Griffith. Jay Billis loves the Brady Bunch. He can go to Pluto and just watch Brady Bunch after Brady Bunch after Brady Bunch after Brady Bunch. And they do it with all of them. They're like old Westerns. There are, you know, they're, I think they've even got like one that does like all Judge Judy's or something like that. It's
Jim Harbaugh would like that. Yeah. He's a huge like Judge Judy fan.
He's probably behind on those right now.
Hey, if Judge Judy came out in favor of Jim Harbaugh, like it made a statement about this, that would actually make this thing like, yeah, that would.
That's what the NCAA should do. They should just haul Connor Stallions in front of Judge Judy and we'll get it all figured out. Get to the bottom of it in an hour.
Probably do a better job than the IRP did with the basketball scandal.
But Judge, that's a great idea.
So, Steve will appreciate this. I was in the Stanford football office. Doing a spring story for Sports Illustrated the day Harbaugh was at or on Judge Judy. And like David Shaw walks out, looks, there's like a TV in the hallway, looks at it, crosses his arms, looks at me, shakes his head, walks back in his office. And it was like, how to say everything without opening your mouth. It was like, it was one of those moments where I was like, did that just happen? And he was like, look. And I was like, whoa. And he goes, whoop, and just walks back.
We're going to make picks after all of this. I won't even have to pick my favorite show on Pluto TV, which, you know, I don't know. Anyway, you've learned more about me than I really care to reveal at this point. So I guess this is the time when I probably should remind you that Weekend Preview is brought to you by Eckrich Smoked Sausage. Psst, the secret to winning game days this college football season is Eckrich Smoked Sausage. Visit Eckrich.com for dozens of simple, mouthwatering recipes to elevate your next tailgate. Taylor, what do you have for us, kid? Let's make some picks.
Reese, what a wholesome fact we all just learned about you. I mean,
it really fits, doesn't it, Taylor?
Adding to the legend of Reese Davis. Unbelievable here. All right, let's pick some games.
Paul Drake would also get to the bottom of all of these. He's a great private investigator. You put him on this case and less than an hour with commercial time, he's to the bottom of it. Get you all the evidence you need right there. That'd do it.
He'd pick some winners. Steve, still picking winners here. 5-3. I tell everyone I know, listen to Steve's picks on the podcast. That's where it's at. Reese, you won 500. Pete, the goose egg, as mentioned previously, Steve, 8 games over 500. Reese, 3 under, and Pete way back, but still a nice guy at heart. First game up, let's go. Kansas State at Texas. Texas, a 4-point favorite that kicks off at noon Eastern. Let's go, Reese, Steve, Pete.
How about the resurgence of the Kansas State Wildcats, sort of given up after winning the Big 12 last year? This year lost a couple of games early, only one of them in conference. Now there's a 5-way tie atop the Big 12, and Kansas State, what do you know, is right in the middle of it. The week after, Houston played Texas to a touchdown game, probably still smarting from that, so you don't want to overreact, but Kansas State beat them 41-0. They haven't given up a touchdown in their last two games. They have a top 25 rush defense, and with Texas, we assume, again, playing Malik Murphy at quarterback, might be a little bit more reliant on the running game, which has been very good for them. The one thing I will say is that for all of the things Kansas State has accomplished under Chris Klieman, they're 0 for Texas. And in fact, predating him, they haven't beaten them since 2016. That's 6 straight wins for the Horns. Kansas State's doing the less of the two quarterback thing, I think. It seems like Will Howard sort of found his footing after throwing 3 picks in that loss to Oklahoma State. Hasn't thrown one since. Texas had some trouble with Dillon Gabriel running, and Kansas State certainly going to run the quarterback, whether it's Will Howard most of the time or Avery Johnson. Both of them have found the end zone six times. There are a ton of things pointing toward Kansas State in this game, and I can't do it. I'm going to take the horns and lay the four.
Wow, that was leading all in the signs of Kansas State. You touched
spent
on Kansas.
Too much time with Corso, you can tell
he likes the okie doke.
Oh, it's a great call. I look at you mentioned all the stuff about Kansas State, what they do well. I also, you know, I just think it's a sign of a great coaching staff. I really do, to see this team always ascending. And the way they've done it, and now with the portal, those guys too have had guys taken. They've gotten guys in. And on the other side, you look at Texas's defense, where the only time they let up more than 24 was that loss to Oklahoma. So with Malik back at quarterback for a second straight week, all signs point to that. Pete can update if that's different. I think it's a real low-scoring game. I really do. But the way Texas is going to want to get Malik involved in that run game and stay with the run game with the two guys they have, I'm going to take the four. I'm going to take the points with Kansas State. I think it's a field goal game, and the Cats keep it close.
I've noticed the inordinate amount of times Steve like takes the team to cover but not win when it's a small point spread. Like, I feel like you do that just like almost every time. So I'm just going to say Kansas State's going to win this football game. This is just like classic. Like, right from Central Coast. First of all, Reese brought this up, and I think it's an unbelievable stat that needs to be expounded on a little bit. Kansas State has not allowed a touchdown in two games against a Briles and a Holgorsen. All right? Now, I don't care who they are, where they are, what personnel they have. Those are not two dudes that don't score touchdowns, right? So I really feel like Joe Klanderman is on point right now, and he's got a backup quarterback who's shown some to be a little bit prone to poor decisions. And there's an offensive line that on paper was supposed to be better, but has shown some fits of porousness this year. So I also want to see Avery Johnson in this game. Now, again, Chris Klieman is the best coach in the Big 12, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the guy's won a bunch of national championships. He's an elite team builder. He's done a great job getting this team better throughout the season, which is a sign of a high end coach. The insertion of Avery Johnson, that was in that Texas Tech game, correct? When he came in and ran for five touchdowns? Mm-hmm. That guy was electric, man. Like, that was like a rare, he had like a Braxton Miller-y burst. It was different. Like, I really like, and again, you guys brought up the great point about Texas's struggles with a running quarterback. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in spots, see him creatively. Colin Klein obviously knows a lot about running quarterbacks and how to use them. So, again, it, fascinating collision of 0 for Texas versus this, but I'm going to take K-State for the win. And since I'm 20 games below 500, and made no good predictions, I'll just dangle out there that I did pick K-State preseason to win the Big 12.
All right.
Again,
Texas A&M heading to Ole Miss. Ole Miss at 3.5-point favorite. Lane Kiffin needling in the press conference this week. That kicks off at noon. Let's go Steve, Pete, Reese.
Well, first and foremost, we have game day implications on this one. Correct, gentlemen?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So,
sure.
There's always a side that tends to lead a certain way when those are involved. I just look at Ole Miss, and I get it. Everybody says they're underappreciated. They only have the one loss to Bama, where they did play their worst game of the year. But I think that was because Bama dictated what was going to happen in that game. You know, you look at the wins, 7-point win over Arkansas, 7-point win over Auburn. It's a, you know, it's still a two-possession game in the fourth quarter against Vanderbilt last week. I just feel like when you look at this matchup and the way A&M's got some dudes on defense. You know, everybody talks about the offense and the head coach, but they had some guys up front that are really, really playing well, all SEC level. Again, it's a field goal game to me. And if it's 3.5, I'm taking the underdog here with A&M. I just feel like the capability up front is better, and I don't like the matchup for Ole Miss on both sides of the line of scrimmage. So give me the Aggies plus the points.
Man, just riding hard with Texas A&M, Steve. Yeah, I can't do it, man. I just can't do it. This would fit in the we have to get this bit sponsored, but it would fit in that Pepto-Bismol like churn game. Ole Miss is up 21-0 in the first quarter, and I'd be like, oh my God, why did I possibly pick Texas A&M in this? We, you know, you're looking at someone who's a team whose rush offense is 98th in the country. Their pass offense is 42nd. Like, they do have a fairly solid defense, especially when it comes to scoring defense. So I guess total yardage defense. So I do give DJ Durkin credit for that, but I just don't think they will be able to move the ball at the same pace Ole Miss can move the ball. It's pretty simple math for me here. And I am not going to overthink it. And I'm not going to be reaching for Tums come Saturday afternoon.
You guys have hit the big statistical things. This is a mindset game more than anything else. Everything in me wants to go along with Steve. I mean, it's like the old Digger Phelps saying, he goes, smell it. I smell it. I smell Ole Miss, you know, face planting here in this. But the stronger part of me, I think, against A&M, you know, it was like A&M came in there a couple of years ago and couldn't get it done, should have, kind of, you know, sloppy on offense, couldn't finish drives. I think the Ole Miss defense is, you know, pretty average at best, but, you know, A&M's offense has been far from fixed. I think there will be a lot of consternation in College Station, particularly after what Taylor referenced of Lane Kiffin sort of in low talking Lane mode, giving them the little jab about, you know, well, we're, you know, back around the top 10. You'd think with all those NFL guys that they've been top 10, but you know, they're trying to get bowl eligible. We'd like to stop them from that. It's like, okay, wow. You know, it was pretty funny. I don't know how intentional it was, or if he just sort of started talking and didn't stop. But I don't really totally trust either of these teams.
Mm.
But I think I'm gonna go Ole Miss and say they at least set up a potential game day situation in Athens next week. That is not set. Doesn't mean. If you're listening, doesn't mean if Ole Miss wins, definitely going to Athens. Just means that that is really attractive destination, if so. But I'm going to go with Hottie Toddy and say that they win it 24-20, likely because A&M's driving for the win and fumbles or drop kicks the ball out of bounds or something on fourth down or snaps it over the quarterback's head. Something will go wrong and they'll snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
We'll hand Steve the Tums in the office in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I hope all the Tyler from Spartanburg show up for this matchup with Notre Dame coming to town, a 3-point favorite at Clemson. This game kicks off at noon Eastern. Let's go, Pete, Reese, Steve.
My pick is going to be simple. This Notre Dame team is not exponentially different than last year's Notre Dame team. I might think it might be a little bit better. Certainly the injury to Mitchell Evans hurts Notre Dame. So I don't want to discount that. But last year after this game, 35-14 Irish, quote, "They just physically kicked our butt, period, the end," Dabo Swinney said. "They absolutely dominated us in every aspect of football, and it starts with coaching, tackling, blocking, you name it. It is what it is." So do we think Clemson has changed enough to a point where they can now out-physical Notre Dame? I don't. So I'm going to take the Irish to win on the road in Death Valley.
To Pete's point, Notre Dame ran for 263 yards last year, and Clemson ran for 90. They controlled the line of scrimmage there. I mean, now a guy went for over 100, now plays for LSU, but Notre Dame's got a bevy of running backs. Notre Dame is top 10 in the country in turnover margin. Clemson is barely in the top 100. They've lost 10 fumbles. Only Army and Nebraska have lost more. And one thing when you look at fumbles is you have to say, well, have you been particularly unlucky? Because the statistics will tell you over the course of time that because the ball bounces in peculiar ways, you're going to be right around 50%. So you think, well, maybe they lost 10 of 12. They've been really lucky. They fumbled 16 times. So maybe they've been slightly unlucky. They lost 62% of them. It's way too many. The whole now we go philosophy, now we're mad, now we're really going to play. Maybe one week it's going to happen for Clemson, but I would have thought it might have happened last week against NC State. What I think of Clemson right now is I don't think the program is totally broken. I think Dabo can fix it. I think he will. I think they will improve, but I think they are what they are this year, and I think Notre Dame's better. And while I'm really, really almost philosophically against, you know, not taking Clemson in the points at home at Death Valley, I'm going to go with Notre Dame because they're a better team.
Pete, what do you got on Shipley?
I have not.
He's in protocol. Is all
protocol.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's one.
So we'll probably know that. We'll probably know that pregame. But that if you're investing in this game, that's significant.
Yeah. That's what I'm interested in. Also, just the scene for a noon kickoff game with all that's happened the last couple of weeks, and knowing the school pride that Clemson fan base has. Has it been shaken at all? What's happened? I'm really interested to see, you know, what that scene is like for a noon kickoff in at Clemson. So I agree with all what you guys say. It just feels like Clemson's the right side. I don't really have anything other than I do believe they have the manpower up front to stop that run game. Notre Dame's played against some bad teams recently where that offense has looked really, really good and a lot better than it did against teams that had the caliber of talent on defense like Clemson has. I also just want to point out Virginia Tech's 3-1 in the ACC and Clemson's 2-4. I can't stop looking at that every day. But let's say Notre Dame wins a one-point game. We'll take Clemson plus the points.
Steve, I think this is going to be 16-13.
Yeah, I
you know, 13-10, something.
20, something like 20, that. 20 could win this one.
Next up, kind of a sad one here. Oklahoma, 5.5-point favorite at Oklahoma State. The last Big 12 bedlam. Who knows when we'll see these teams play again. Let's hear it from Reese, Steve, and then Pete.
Let's make no mistake about this, Taylor. They could play if they wanted to. I understand what Gundy is saying. It is Oklahoma's decision. They're the ones who left the league. But this is all about hurt feelings and being petty. They could play, and they will at some point. It'll die down, and they'll decide to play. They call this bedlam, but there's been nothing chaotic about this series historically. It's been sane and orderly. Oklahoma wins. That's just the way it goes. 91-19-1. Mike Gundy, everybody gets on Gundy. He's 3-15 in bedlam. He lost all four as a player. He did have three wins on the resume as the assistant. But then you realize he's been part of nearly a third of their all-time wins against the Sooners. So relatively speaking, he hasn't been terribly unsuccessful against them. They have found a phenom in Ollie Gordon II. He leads the nation in rushing. He's had back-to-back 250-yard games. He is a guy that I remember them talking about when I was there a couple of years ago, and they decided to give him the ball after, you know, they got whooped a couple of times, got whooped by South Alabama, lost to Iowa State, I think, and they've sort of changed because that's what Gundy does. He finds a way to fix it. He's dancing to Thriller in the team meeting yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw that, but you really need to have a look at that. You know, this is the thing. I like Oklahoma, not down on them at all, but usually Oklahoma State finds a way not to win this game. I think with the emotion of the final bedlam for a while, wanting to send the Sooners off with a fabulous parting gift. And also, I think the Pokes know who they are. I'm going to take the Pokes and the points at home, and I'm also going to call the outright win for Oklahoma State.
Wow.
Ooh.
And stats that don't mean anything for this game, Caleb Williams 0-1 in bedlam, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was something I was going to say, Steve. They ended the Lincoln Riley era
with a
Pokes victory. A little bit different, but they also ended the Big Eight era. The last time they met in the Big Eight before both went to the Big 12, Oklahoma State won. So maybe there's something there too.
Yeah. Got a chance to talk to Barry Sanders at Monday Night Football this week. I was thinking about this game.
I didn't hear you over that name drop. Could you say that again?
Yeah.
Sorry. Well, just got a little loud.
There's not many other names you could drop when you're going to a Lions game than Barry Sanders.
Chris Spielman.
Yes. That's the one guy I wish I got to see, but I could not get him. I think he was still working out through the game. Love Spiels and what they're doing. But I look at this game. I really, with all the great uniform combinations Oklahoma State has, and Pistol Pete's up there is my favorite, one of my favorite mascots. I wish they would go back to the Barry Sanders, Mike Gundy, OSU on the helmet just for this game, and those all oranges or something like that. It'd be great. Anyway, I look at Oklahoma State and what they've done, but they're still giving up a lot of points. And as awesome as it's been, again, it goes back to these coaching staffs and everybody looking at Oklahoma State's schedule. You know, they didn't have to play Texas coming into the year. There was a sneaky pick. Their season win total was only like 6. So I look at them as getting it right, and Bowman being the journeyman that he has been is just an awesome story to see him have success. But I think that defense is going to give up too many. So I'm going to take Oklahoma minus the points.
Oklahoma has a middling rush defense. It's like in the 50s somewhere. It's like 3.7 yards a carry. It's not good. Oklahoma State has a terrible pass defense. And I think which one of those gives the most, I want to say Oklahoma pass efficiency defense is 89th in the country. And again, some of that's the league you play in, and it's a byproduct of pace and all that stuff and pace of opponent, everything like that. But I really just feel like I don't have the conviction that Reese has, and I'm not going to try to do the Stanford Steve needle thread here. So I am going to take Oklahoma, assuming they will be able to just pass the ball enough against a pedestrian secondary of Oklahoma State.
Weather's going to be fine too, so that'll certainly help. That'll help Oklahoma for sure.
Dylan looked a little chilly last week.
Yeah. I think everybody did. Yeah.
Woo! Man.
Packer scouts wouldn't have liked that.
All right, let's see what Missouri can give Georgia as they head to Athens. Georgia, a 15.5-point favorite. This kicks off at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. We'll start with Steve and then go Pete and Reese.
I said last week that Georgia's through this 4 games of Florida, Missouri, Ole Miss, and Tennessee, they're going to be in a nail biter in one. Last week was not one of those. I do think this is the one. For the point spread people out there, I was flying home late Saturday night, and you know, people start posting some numbers. This opened at 18.5. And I might have made a click on that one with the road team then. And at 15.5, I still think Missouri has the goods to frustrate. I know Stetson Bennett was playing last year, and Missouri gave them all they could handle. The issue is Missouri doesn't really get to the passer. And you saw that against LSU. And that's what the dynamic of Jaden Daniels and why he's so good and why I think he's the Heisman front runner. You saw what he's capable in that circumstance when he knows the other team can't get to him, whether it's with his legs or just being more accurate. So I believe Missouri can hold up on the back end. And I believe they're gonna have some success. Georgia's secondary is really coming back to form, but I believe Missouri can have success with some balance in what they've done. I think they've done a great job with the offense, the way they mix it up, multiple sets. And I'm not calling the upset win, but I think 15.5 is too much. I'm gonna take Missouri.
I'm gonna take the Stanford Steve needle thread here and do the same thing. So entering this season, I thought Missouri would have one of the 4 best defenses in the SEC, and their offense was going to be a work in progress. And in reality, the offense came right out and has played really well, and the defense has been a work in progress. But if you look at the past couple of weeks, how they played against Kentucky, how they really shut down South Carolina, the defense is where we thought it would be. Now, obviously, just the way Georgia scorched the turf in Jacksonville is a little bit scary, because I think Florida has a pretty good defensive front, although their secondary stinks. So long way to say that I think Hopper and Rakestraw and some of those guys can slow down Georgia enough. Drinkwitz will be creative enough to move the ball a little bit. And I mean, I just can't get out of my head that game last year where Georgia just couldn't move the ball, probably should have lost if you really look at it. So I just can't see a much better Missouri program just turtling on the stage. I think they go, I think they play. I think Drink brings a bag of tricks with him, and they stay in this thing, and it's a game in the fourth quarter, and they cover.
I don't put much stock in last year's game because last year it was at the stage, I think we've talked about this a little bit, that I give you the benefit of the doubt. You're going to wind up flat at some point. Georgia, you know, was flat. They outscored them 14-3 in the second half. I like this Missouri team a lot, and the corners that you mentioned, defensive players, they've got the goods on defense to be really good. But LSU, you know, had their way with them largely. Here's where I think Missouri will play well. I think Drink will trick them at some point early, and they'll probably score a touchdown off of it. I wouldn't be surprised if Missouri has a lead, but 42-24 is a cover.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably where we're going to wind up. So I'm going to take the dogs and lay the points, but it won't feel like an easy cover. Does that make sense? You know, I'm going to take Georgia, lay in the points, but it'll be in doubt about whether they cover all the way into the fourth quarter. And I say they finally put a resilient Missouri team away, and I'll take the dogs.
I was just going to say this. If Georgia does put up 40-plus and covers, put them at number one.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I might want one more week.
Okay.
But I don't wholly disagree.
I've already got them there, so I can't really.
Pretty. Yeah.
I can't really say anything. I already have them there. So, you know, yeah. I'm just waiting on.
Hence the pick.
Yeah, I'm waiting on Michigan, you know. There you go. Yeah, that's all.
We have an interesting one out here in the Big Ten West.
Is it interesting?
I think there's some
come on.
Intrigue around it. Intrigue around this game. Iowa, Brian Ferentz-less Iowa, 3-point favorite, headed to Northwestern, which beat up on a loser Maryland team last week. So, and the total's 31, so that's fun.
Is that bitter alum? Steve. Is bitter alum Taylor allowed to come out on the podium?
No way. I would never. I'm a journalist with a capital J, Pete.
Did you hide all your like hideous yellow and black Maryland gear from like the mid-2000s after that performance last week?
Oh, it's all in the trash. We took it out this morning. It was easy.
You know, Taylor, I really, as I was watching that game Saturday, the Maryland-Northwestern game, I was like, how did you miss such an obvious superdog? That had, you know, early kick. Maryland, which is, you know, does that a little more often than most. And there's always like the odd game, it seems like. The Northwestern has shown some improvement this year. It's always like the odd game that Northwestern gets up for and plays great. Ohio State last year, I think, although weather helped a little bit there. The question I have here with the Iowa-Northwestern game, with it being played at Wrigley Field, is the wind blowing out? Do we know? With the wind,
is this a one-way game or did they fix it?
No, I think they fixed that. It.
Okay.
They fixed that.
That's well, too that's bad. That was fun.
the intrigue here, and you know, Brian Ferentz is going to finish up the season, but the intrigue here is not whether Iowa wins or covers, it's not whether Northwestern pulls the upset. The real intrigue here is will they score more than 29 runs, which was the highest, or 29 points to match the 29 runs, which was the highest scoring game at Wrigley Field this year? I'm going to say they do not. I'm going to say they don't reach 29. You'll have a baseball game that outscored Iowa and Northwestern. And boy, I don't like laying points with Iowa. So, you know what? So I'm not going to. Give me the Purple Cats. Give me the Purple Cats to win. No, I'm going to say that. Give me the Purple Cats to lose 5-3. 5-3 final.
I don't have much. I don't find intrigue in this game. I'm going to say Iowa wins 7-3. Give me Iowa.
I'll sparkle in a little analysis that some of Northwestern's recent uptick has come with Brendan Sullivan at quarterback. They've been starting Ben Bryant, the Eastern Michigan / Cincinnati transfer. He's been dealing with some injuries. So for those masochists who are going to invest on this game, I would wait until Saturday morning for some clarity. excuse me, on that. That said, I have too much faith in this Iowa defense. The teams at Northwestern, and look, David Braun deserves a ton of credit, right? They're sitting here at 4-4. They won one game last year, right? And they lost a bunch of like their better younger players in the portal before the season started. He has done a heck of a job getting them, keeping them motivated. That thing, the wheels could have come off and they haven't. I think this game will play out like we think it's going to play out. And I think Iowa squeaks by. I'm going to go like it's a, you know, it's a Andre Ware at Houston game for these guys and say that it's like 20-14.
There's no way that anybody scores like 7 or 14 or 17 or like some normal.
So you're calling a no touchdown game, Reese?
No. I mean, we might have touchdowns, but we're going to have something, missed extra points, safeties. So it's going to be, there's going to be like an 18 involved or an 11 or something.
It's a crooked number game.
Yeah. It's like some kind of weird thing.
Yeah. I love weird.
All right. This next one I think is objectively interesting. James Madison, a 5.5-point favorite at Georgia State, kicks off at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. Steve says no. We'll start with Reese, Steve, and then Pete.
Well, the whole intrigue here is, does James Madison stay undefeated and continue the storyline of in their second year of transition, not being allowed to compete for the Sun Belt Championship or go to the postseason, absent some extenuating circumstances where they would backfill a bowl game or something. James Madison is probably not quite what it was offensively last year, but they're still really good on defense. I'm gonna take the Dukes to keep it rolling and lay the points on the road.
Yeah, Tyler, this is way more interesting than Iowa and Northwestern, just so you know. Georgia State off a loss to Georgia Southern, who I think is a good team, last week. James Madison finally gave up over 100 yards rushing that last week, but Old Dominion, I think it took over 40 carries. They still only averaged like 3.2 a carry in that game, but they got over 100. Georgia State loves to run the football. They're almost at 200 yards rushing a game. I can't do it though. Give me James Madison minus the points.
Yeah, so I like the one highlight of my picks pod season was taking Georgia State when both you guys took Marshall a couple weeks ago, and I am in no danger of doing that again. I mean Georgia State's scoring defense is 65th, pass efficiency defense they just gave up 44 to Georgia Southern, so they're on the bottom 7 in the country in passing yards allowed. I just feel like James Madison is good enough, dynamic enough to go into the Thunderdome down there in Atlanta and figure out a way to win by a touchdown.
Next up, Kansas at Iowa State. Iowa State, a 2.5-point favorite. No respect to Kansas. That kicks off at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Let's go Steve, Pete, and then Reese.
Well, you have the unranked team favored versus a ranked team. So that's plenty of intrigue. I do have an Iowa State insider that offers this, my buddy Adam in Iowa. Past 7 seasons, Iowa State is 17-3 in Big 12 home games when the sun sets before or during the game, averaging a 22-point victory, 3-0 versus top 10 teams, held opponents to 15 or fewer points 13 of the 20 games. I'll take Iowa State.
Doesn't the sun set at like 1:45?
It's not Pullman, but it's pretty close.
Yes. tip of the cap to Matt Campbell, who after losing to Ohio, beat Oklahoma State, which at the time didn't seem like that big of a deal, and now seems like a really nice win. And then they've gone on to beat TCU, trounce to Cincinnati, and kind of manhandle Baylor. And they can. There was a chaos scenario somebody presented. It probably was Sicko's committee because it's in their wheelhouse. I don't remember who it was. Where the playoff was, Air Force, Rutgers, Iowa State, and maybe Virginia Tech, something like that. Anyway, it was glorious. But Matt Campbell has sort of pulled himself up off the mat after after a couple lackluster seasons following their Fiesta Bowl appearance. They won that game, right? Did they beat Oregon? Yeah, they won that game. Yeah. So anyway, Matt Campbell was as hot as he ever could have been and got a little chilly. And now, and considering that they had some pretty significant personnel losses from the gambling scandal, you know, tip of the cap there. They have cobbled together, figured it out, made some coordinator changes, the whole thing. That said, Kansas is winning. I mean, Kansas is going to cover. Kansas is getting points. I have too much faith in the bean, man, watching that mullet flow in the breeze there. So sun up, sun down, rock chalk.
Man, I'm very wary for a lot of the reasons that Steve mentioned, and not the least of which that last year Iowa State would have won in Lawrence if not for the field goal mishaps, which became a big part of the signage when we took College Game Day to Kansas shortly thereafter. Mm-hmm. Coming off that win against Oklahoma and then going there, I really want to pick Iowa State, but I think Kansas is better. And it's only a field goal, so I'm going to go with Kansas and say that at least Iowa State's part of that five-way tie for first place in the Big 12, with Kansas being a game back. Kansas, I'm going to say, keeps a two-loss scenario alive for a team making the conference championship game. So I'm going to take the Jayhawks too and lay the 2.5.
Washington, a 3.5-point favorite at USC. This kicks off at 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Let's go, Pete, Reese, Steve.
So two interesting sort of dips we're in the middle of. We're in the middle of USC's defense dipping into mind-bending places of giving up chunk plays. And when they're in the middle of watching Washington's defense go from electric to pedestrian over the past few weeks. It's really, really simplistic to say that USC's defense will be the cure Washington needed. I am really curious. They're pretty banged up at receiver right now in Seattle. Jalen McMillan left early again from the last game. I don't think Giles Jackson played in that game. And so it will be interesting to see if it is indeed the cure. USC's defense is the cure that everyone expects for Washington. But at this point, this falls in like the antacid game category of if I take USC, they give up 400 yards in the first half. It's like, well, of course they did. So I will believe a turn is coming there on the defensive end when I see it. And we really haven't seen it for two seasons now. So take Washington, cover, roll.
I'm going to take Washington too. Part of Washington's problem, in addition to health, and Michael Penix, I'm told, is feeling much better than he had really for the last week and a half. It, you know, struggles to kind of, do all the things he normally did because he had been under the weather, but he's kind of turned the corners, feeling much, much better. Maybe some of those guys will be back. The defensive thing that Pete mentioned, another problem for Washington has been turnovers, and USC hasn't capitalized on turnovers the way it did a year ago. They were plus 21 to lead the nation last year. They're plus 2 this year. They've only intercepted 6 passes. And Washington in the last 2 games is minus 5 in turnovers. I think Washington sort of does a better job taking care of the ball. I think that Penix will be himself. I think the Huskies probably got their attention that people are questioning them after the last 2 weeks. But to be fair, they've earned the questioning against those two teams. If you're a national championship contender, can't have both of them. You can only have one. And they played below standard significantly in each of the last 2 games. That said, I think I really have a lot of respect for USC pulling that game out against Cal last week because it looked lost numerous times. I think Washington's going to make a statement. I'm going to take the Huskies and lay the points.
Agree with all you guys said. Last week I thought it was too many points for USC. I said Caleb was going to come back and play great, and he did. I think he plays great in this scenario here. I think Penix plays great in this scenario here. Something just tells me when you talk to people that play against USC, the idea is to make USC tackle you. Washington doesn't really do that. They throw the football down the field. And I just, there's a sense to me that Caleb and those guys can score, and I think they're more efficient than Washington, and Penix will be great. I think USC's better on offense. I really believe that, and I'm taking USC.
You have faith in that O-line, Steve, being a hand-in-the-dirt guy?
I do. A lot. I mean, Reese touched on the turnovers, but that Washington defense, when you know you're off that Oregon game, they showed up and won the game for them on a, you know, I don't know why coaches hate kicking field goals, but Arizona State decided not to. And then last week, the defense was not good. Not good against a Stanford team that had their best offensive day of the year. So I just look at the crispness of USC's offense, I think, in the detail that they bring to the table, I think it's going to be a lot. And Washington's been coasting these next couple weeks. I think it's a wake-up call.
Got the College game day game. The fellas here, they're going to be in Tuscaloosa. Reese has issued a challenge to the Bama fans. LSU is a 3-point dog. Alabama, 3-point favorite. This kicks off at 8 p.m. Eastern. Let's go Reese, Steve, and then Pete.
Reese, how's that challenge gone? Has your challenge been challenged at all?
We have come up with some incentives. We have tried to incentivize the Greek community there to show up and bring it. Because, as I said on the podcast Monday, they're going to need it in the game. LSU has had much more success in big games in the state of Alabama against Alabama than they have when they play at home. Last year, obviously, notwithstanding. They've played well in Tuscaloosa, or dating years back in Birmingham. Why? I don't know. I talked to Jacob Hester about it this week. He goes, I don't know. He goes, we couldn't beat them, you know, very often in Baton Rouge, but you know, there we played well. You know, I can't. Jaden Daniels has been sensational, and you know, I always laugh because people say, well, the mobile quarterbacks give Alabama's defense problems, a dual threat quarterback. Well, who do they not give problems to? You know, who is it that Cam Newton and Tim Tebow or Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels, Johnny Manziel, who do they not give problems to? Everybody. And Jaden Daniels is a major problem. And he's playing great. His numbers are similar to Joe Burrow's in his Heisman year. He's got two absolute, studs at wide receiver. I think this whole game is decided by what type of game it is. If it is an up and down track meet, like the LSU-Missouri game this year or the LSU-Ole Miss game this year, LSU's winning that game. Mm-hmm. But if Alabama can control the middle of the and get pressure in the middle and not be so afraid of him escaping that they don't really pressure him, then it's going to be a long day. I haven't been able to pick Alabama correctly this year when, you know, I don't think they're going to win against Ole Miss. They do. I thought they'd pull out away against Texas. They didn't. And it's hard to get a read on them. I think I picked Tennessee to cover and mm-hmm. the Alabama won by 14. On the other side, I'm interested to see if Harold Perkins makes an impact on this. He's only got 3 sacks this year. And, you know, he had more than that in a single game against Arkansas a year ago. I'm gonna take the home team, take the field goal, and say they win a close one. But it's not going to surprise me at all if LSU wins, especially if the game starts going up and down. Alabama doesn't have that on offense, in my judgment. But I'll take Alabama and lay the 3.
I'm in a tough spot here because the way I do my tape watches, I'll rip through one side of a team, and I just got done with LSU's offense. Oh. And it's really hard. Now, going into this, I've said all the last 2 weeks, Bama, I like Bama in this matchup. And with that being said, Reese, you touched on it. The over-under is 60.5. If this game goes over, LSU's winning. If it goes under, Alabama's going to win this game. I'm not in this camp of LSU's defense is fixed after playing Auburn and Army. I'm sorry. I'm just not there. And it's a lot like the Texas matchup. Texas dictated. They hit the balls over the top of that Bama defense, and that's what you have to do. But I look at the improvements Alabama has made every single week. I like the matchup. I love the idea. You know, we talked about USC not being able to tackle guys. Alabama does that. They have guys at every level that are really, really good defensive players and look like Alabama defensive players from the past. So I think Alabama mucks it up. It keeps Jaden Daniels off that field with the run game. And I'm going to take Bama plus the points. I mean, minus the points. Sorry.
Yeah, I was ready to make the point that Reese made about Harold Perkins, and I'll double down with that with Mason Smith. You know, going into this season, remember, he was suspended for the Florida State game. He was a guy that NFL people talked about being a top 15 type draft pick. And he has been, you know, in terms of being a disruptor, he has basically been a no-show this year. And then Harold Perkins has been mediocre compared to the, you know, compared to that Arkansas game when he, you know, when he made his name. And I do wonder now, when history looks back at Perkins, if you remove that game from last season, he was very good, but he wasn't, you know, the electric monster we thought he would be coming into this year. So he's in a sophomore slump. Smith has just been mediocre at best. And I just don't have faith in that defense, like Steve said. So I think one of those two guys has to play like we thought they would play this year for LSU to go there and win. And I am not going to take that. I don't love the Bama offense, but I like Saban in these kinds of games at home. So until LSU has proven it's fixed his defense, that's where we are.
We didn't even mention the Brian Kelly versus Tommy Reese either. That's fascinating to me.
It's there's a mutual friend of theirs that when that hire was made, so he told me, he said, Saban just wanted Brian's playbook. So there's a little intrigue there. And then, you know, BK, blunt as he always is, has said plenty, you know, not in a bad way, but just about beating Alabama and signifying the arrival and so forth. Things like that tend to get noticed and remembered. And the boss in Tuscaloosa gets wound up for this one. He just does. He likes to downplay it. You understand it because he's got great relationships and lifelong friends from the very special time in Baton Rouge. 20 years ago, they won a national championship. 20-year anniversary of that LSU title team.
That'd be a nice mention during a game on the board.
Yeah, yeah, you think? I don't know. They won't know what to do. They'll want to cheer.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what I said.
The team you did it with.
Do it during the light show. That'll be perfect.
Last game for today, UCLA, a 2.5-point favorite at Arizona. Pac-12 After Dark. This kicks off at 10:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll start with Steve, then go Pete and Reese.
Yeah, this is a fascinating matchup, guys. Love what both staffs have done with their personnel pertaining. You know, UCLA's strength is defense. Arizona's is offense. I do like some of the personnel on Arizona's defense. The difference to me is I can't stand the UCLA quarterback situation, and I love the Arizona quarterback situation. Give me the home team again at home, late night in Tucson. It's going to get weird. I'll take Arizona plus the points.
I'll echo the weird. We can always root for weird. I mean, no one has said anything formally about Noah Fifita, but at this point, if he's not starting, there would be something seriously wrong. I mean, he has been a revelation, kind of your classic guy who like probably would have been recruited higher if he was like 6'3" and looked like he should be a uniform model. But boy, man, that kid can ball, and he's done it week after week. And again, you don't get merit badges in major college football for close losses, but he certainly had a few of those. And now that he's had a few wins, it looks like, you know, Jed Fish has a centerpiece for the future. That said, I just think talent-wise, I'm not sold that Arizona's at the class of UCLA right now. So I think Chip, with Garbers, is going to figure it out. He's going to slow it down. It's going to be a low-scoring game, and I think the Bruins go there and win and cover.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. I'm really glad to hear you say that because I know Arizona's the flavor of the moment, but I like their offense so much, and I like the fact that they've been able to build on games. It hasn't been like, well, we rose up, we played Washington tough. Well, then they did it again against SC, you know, and then they're able to blow out Wazoo when you figured, okay, now they're going to go on the road and it'll all come crashing down and it'll be too much. And then the game against Oregon State was really impressive because I think Oregon State's really good.
Yep.
And I thought that was an excellent win for the Wildcats. And, you know, I'm going to take Arizona. I'm going to take Arizona at home and with Fifita and McMillan, who I really like. And I think they'll find a way to win because UCLA just seems to sputter a lot, turn the ball over, had some of the problems. You know, I just, I, I think Chip is holding that together with duct tape and baling wire, and he's doing a great job with it. But Arizona seems to have a little bit of a rhythm. I think Jed Fish knows the overtime rules. He might need to know them again because I figure this is going to be a close game. But I'm gonna take the Wildcats.
That's all we got.
All right, that's all we got.
That's it. That's it. That's only 11 games.
Only 11. Boy, that's a real opportunity for Thamel to make a comeback by picking 11 games.
I mentioned that to Tyler before.
Did you?
Yeah. Just him a leaving chance? A door open. Just keep leaving a door open for the guys. Baseball playoffs. Let's like get more teams in the playoffs.
Guys, look forward to seeing you in Tuscaloosa. It's going to be a great morning, a great Saturday of games for the first Saturday in November. We'll get a little more shaping, perhaps even a little clarity on the picture as we shape up in this college football playoff race. Thanks for listening to the College Game Day podcast. Ask you to subscribe, download it wherever it is that you like to get your podcast. We appreciate you listening, and we'll talk next time.